For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now faith, hope, and love abide, these three. And the greatest of these is love. My cousin Kelly married a man named Patrick. He, an ordained Baptist pastor, and then the two of them worked together to become missionaries in Papua New Guinea. And there they had and raised five daughters. I guess the Baptists are prolific people. Raised all of them there in that part of the world, kind of in ragged and rugged conditions. I remember the harrowing tales that they would tell. Tales of disease and hardships, stories about dangers and wild animals and even wilder neighbors. 8 years ago, I remember that their youngest daughter, Abby was her name, a sweet, beautiful kid who at the time was 13 years old. They were home. Their home church is in Tacoma, so they came home on furlough. And while they were there, it was, for all the kids, kind of a culture shock. But for Abby especially, it was like a completely different sort of a world. She came home after playing one day with some of her neighborhood friends and complained about a sore on her mouth. My cousin Kelly thought, well, this is Abby's first zit. But the next morning, when Abby awakened, something had gone wrong. That sore on her mouth had gone gray and black, and Abby herself was acting sort of strange. So they went to St. Joseph's in Tacoma and weren't there long before they were quickly rushed to Children's up here closer in Seattle because Abby didn't have a zit. She had a very serious infection. In fact, it was necrotizing fasciitis. Do you know what that is? It's that flesh-eating disease. And very quickly, that organism had spread across part of her face. And the only way to take care of that is not by antibiotics. You have to remove the tissue. You have to cut away this kid's face. So they started with the first surgery, and then they put her into a hyperbaric chamber where they increased the pressure and increased the amount of oxygen there in that place. Then they anesthetized her and took her out and cut yet away more of her, parts of her jaw, some of her teeth, put her back in the hyperbaric chamber as that degrees, that organism made its way further across and up toward the temple on her face. And that's when they became very worried as it got closer and closer to Abby's brain. So they were very candid with my cousin and her husband and explained that Abby may die. Two more surgeries and two more trips through the hyperbaric chamber, and they finally stopped it as it got near the top of her head. But not after removing so much of Abby. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. Later that year, we had a family reunion. We decided to accelerate it a little bit just because we didn't know what was in store for Abby. So we got together, and this kid showed up, and she was doing pretty well, but you could see how she was self-conscious because she would take her left hand and put it up over her face. And it was time to eat the coleslaw and the salad. She had to literally hold it into her mouth to chew it because part of her lip, part of her cheek and face were missing. And she kind of giggled in a 13-year-old sort of way, but it worked. And now, years later, I actually called up to see how she's been doing here these last years. And there have been even more surgeries, but it's been hard. Hard to rebuild her mouth and her jaw because faces matter. Not just to 13-year-old girls, but faces matter. They are a big deal. Faces are personal and unique. They are our identity, our personhood. Your face is you. I don't know if you've ever watched a young child watch their expression. But if you were to have one of those beloved ones and put on a Halloween mask or somehow distort your face, what happens to the kid's expression? They become a little distressed and even frightened. It's confused as little ones because our faces communicate so much. They register emotions and thoughts and intentions. Our faces are fragile, they are precious, and they are ours. You already know this, but what's the number one social media site on the internet? Over a billion users, and I suppose they make that much every year. It's not Twitter, it's not Snapchat, it's Facebook. Some of us check Facebook every week. Some of you check it every day. Some check it every hour. Some of you are checking it right now. I don't know. Facebook, what a brilliant name. Did they do marketing research to come up with that? And of course, Facebook allows you to not only set up an account, but they give you room to do a little profile. So a lot of us like to find a flattering picture of ourselves to use as the profile, find one that's young and skinny. Some people just put pictures of their cats in there, I guess, so that they can look at that. But our faces are the way that we relate. Our faces are the medium of our interaction with others. They are the visible agency of our personhood. That's why I think we can say that, well, Jesus is God with the face. Jesus is God with a face. Not a theory or an abstraction. God, not a principle, but God in person. God tangible and present. Now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. So faith, hope, and love abide, these three. But the greatest is love. Carla and I have been watching each other's faces for a lot of years now, and they look different now than they did, well, the pictures that appear in our wedding pictures together. She still looks pretty good, but man, I've changed. And looking at one another's faces, we've gotten, well, pretty good at reading those faces. We've gotten really good. And nobody else can tell, but we know she's mad. Nobody else knows, but I can tell he's disappointed. Nobody else would be able to tell, but she can, that I think it's your turn to cook dinner tonight. But sometimes we also see something else in one another's faces. We see empathy. I've watched her face during childbirth, and she's watched my face passing a kidney stone. We know. We know when one another is being honest. We know when on the best days there is love. There is Christ's love for one another, Christ's love for me, even when I don't deserve it. So indeed, if Jesus is the face of God, and if we are all little Christ, as Luther would say, then maybe the church is the contemporary face of God, the face of God here and now. Is it kooky to say that the church is God's Facebook? The church is God's Facebook account with images and stories and posts, the life and times of God's people, the life and times of God's intention and purpose in the world. That the church is God's Facebook. They're always unfolding and constantly surprising. God's pleasures lived out here among us. Sometimes, though, I suppose the church gets hit hard right in the kisser, as my dad would say, hit hard with circumstances or with wounds, hit hard with blunders, even sinister attacks. The church, the face of God, gets hurt. Gets a black eye, gets marked, gets bloodied, even gets necrotizing fasciitis. Now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. And so faith, hope, and love abide, these three. The greatest of these, the greatest of these, the greatest of these. Maybe the annual meeting of the church is a good time to look in the mirror. Look in the mirror and see dimly, see darkly, see imperfectly the honest realities about who we are and what we are. That all that we really have is God's love. That it's not about, and it's never been about, our stuff or our heritage. It's not about, and it's never been about, our facilities or our assets. That it's not about, and it's never been about, our traditions or even our theology. Even while all those have value, all what we really have is the face of God, the love of God. Now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. So now faith and hope and love abide in the greatest of these. Amen.